Monitor now invites you to Meet the Press, America's press conference of the year, winner of every major award in its field. Today's guest on Meet the Press will be screen and TV actor Ronald Reagan, who this week announced he will seek the Republican nomination for governor of California. We will bring you today's program in a moment.
This is Frank Blair, your Sunday Night Monitor host. How does a legitimate Broadway actress feel before the opening of her first big musical? Julie Harris gave our Sunday Night Monitor audience this answer.
I thought, well, I'll get up on that stage and my knees will buckle and my voice will quaver and I'll just fall apart when I hear the orchestra play and see everybody around me. I'll just collapse. But I didn't, and instead it was a thrilling feeling. It was like, you know, you suddenly drink something nice and warm and you feel all a glow inside. I really felt that. I wasn't terrified. And I looked around me and everybody seemed to be having such a good time. And the audience responded so marvelously. Well, it was just, you couldn't help being caught up in all that excitement.
Join us on Sunday Night Monitor each weekend on this NBC station.
100,000 Americans die each year from some form of kidney disease. And at least 3 million others have an undiagnosed infectious disease of the kidneys. Much that is known about kidney disease has been discovered only recently. But recent advances, such as the dramatic new uses for the artificial kidney and kidney transplant programs, now offer new hope where formerly there was none. Your support of your local kidney foundation will increase that hope. And now Meet the Press. Today's guest, actor Ronald Reagan, who this week announced he will seek the Republican nomination for governor of California. Our panel consists of Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent panelist and producer of Meet the Press, David Kraslow of the Los Angeles Times, James J. Kilpatrick, the Richmond News leader, and our moderator, Edwin Newman, NBC News. Mr. Reagan is in our Burbank studio with Tom Pettit of NBC News.
We'll have the first questions from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Reagan, may I ask you a few comparatively simple and probably naive questions? Why do you want to be governor of California?
Well, there would be several ways to answer that. One, if it had to do with, say, my personal likes or what I think I would like to do or find pleasant to do, I'd probably have to approach the negative. But I happen to feel very strongly that we've reached a period in which the philosophical differences between the two parties are so great that it's high time that more people from the rank and file of the citizenry involve themselves so that we can have government of and by as well as for the people.
Well, why do you think you'd be a good governor?
Well, maybe because I believe this so strongly, maybe because I have so much faith that government should be of the people, and my belief that we've had too much government, particularly in the state of California, by administrative edict and rule. And I happen to believe that the people of California can do a pretty good job of running their own affairs.
California today is one of the largest, if not the largest, state of the Union, and certainly one of the most complex. You've had practically no political experience. Why didn't you seek a lower office before you sought the highest office? Why didn't you run for Congress, or for mayor, or for assembly, or for the Senate?
Well, because the people who approached me regarding the problem of healing some of the wounds and the splits that we've had in our party in recent years here in California, and the need to get back on the victory trail if we are going to restore the balance between the two parties, approached me with regard to running for this particular office. And I set out and for several months have been traveling around the state, talking to people, answering questions, asking questions to find out whether there was an acceptability on the part of the people. And that's why I'm running.
Don't you yourself think it might have been better if you'd gotten some political experience running for lower office, though?
Well, this might be true if I had set out to have a political career. But frankly, Until last November, it had never occurred to me. As a matter of fact, completely the opposite. I would have denied and meant it with all my heart that I ever intended to do this. I've spent a number of years talking, preaching, as a matter of fact, my philosophy, my belief in constitutional limits on government and fiscal responsibility and so forth, and I thought that that was my contribution to the public welfare. So, let's say it just, this is the result of a lot of circumstances.
Mr. Reagan, it's being said and written. This, for example, came out of the Washington Post this morning, and I'd like to read it to you. It says your campaign is an attempt to turn an actor into a believable candidate for governor and to make voters forget your right-wing views. Now, you're going to have to meet that all through the campaign. How do you plan to counter such attacks?
Well, I think by simply telling the truth. If people will listen to where I stand on the issues, and they'll have every chance to find out where I stand, because I intend at every public appearance to allow my listeners to ask me questions, I think they'll find out that this is a false image that is being created, or they're attempting to create, with regard to me. That seems to be the modern dialogue in politics anymore. Not to dispute you on what you honestly believe, but to create a false image, to invest you with beliefs that aren't yours. And as I say, I think the people, if they'll listen to me, they'll find out the false image doesn't stand up.
We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Pettit.
Mr. Reagan, do you think that your views on California's state issues are clearly understood and well known at this point in the campaign?
Well, probably not more than in a general sense, because first of all, it's only been a few days since I've declared, and second of all, I have made it plain that in the months ahead, as the campaign continues, I will present more specific proposals with regard to our problems here in the state. I've only touched on them in a general way so far.
You've been quoted in the past as saying that the graduated income tax is a system spawned by Karl Marx as the prime essential in the socialist state. If elected governor of California, would you work toward repeal of the California state income tax?
No, I am not opposed to the income tax as such, and you're quoting a generalization which I have made in the past about the tendency toward a progressive tax system and its original, its origin, as compared to the philosophy of proportionate taxation. And most people have bought progressive taxation under the delusion that it is proportionate taxation. But I have always insisted that people pay taxes. And it doesn't make a great deal of difference which method you choose to extract the money from the pockets, which must be done if we're to have the services that government should provide. And I happen to believe that probably the fairest and the most efficiently administered way of taxation is at the source of, well, at the spending and at the receipt of money. In other words, a combination of excise or sales tax and income tax, providing this is equitable and that everyone bears his fair share, share of the burden.
Do you think that's now the case in California?
Oh, I think that California is typical of the country as a whole in that we're long overdue for a real in-depth study of tax reform. I think we've had layers of taxes, one on top of the other, and no one ever seems to repeal a tax until we don't really know, indeed, whether some taxes actually contribute much or whether they their own take is used up in administering and collecting of the tax. And I think that the, as I say, we need an in-depth study to find out how we could simplify, how we could streamline the collection, the handling of tax, and how we could make it less costly to collect and easier to administer.
Questions now for Mr. Kraslow.
Mr. Reagan, could you still be described accurately as a Goldwater conservative?
Well, now, Mr. Kraslow, I don't like using labels and hyphens at all. I don't think those labels or those titles mean anything anymore. I might find a word that, in my mind, described my philosophy, and find that the person I was talking to had a completely different picture or meaning with regard to that word, and we'd sort of lose communication. It might even put a chip on their shoulder if they heard me use it. I say that we should discuss, let's stop selling labels and start selling our stand on issues. Now, I supported and was very proud to support Senator Goldwater and the entire ticket in the last campaign. But I also supported the entire ticket in 1962, and I did so in 1960. Since I've been a Republican, and I was a Democrat most of my life, I believe that you play on the team. And I have participated to the best of my ability, and I did nothing in the 64 campaign that I didn't do in those other campaigns.
Have your views changed substantially in any regard since the 1964 campaign?
No. As a matter of fact, my views haven't changed an awful lot since I was a Democrat. I believed then that anything, whether it came from labor, management, or government, that imposed unfairly on the individual or the freedom of the individual was tyranny and should be opposed. I still feel that way.
Well, you spoke in your campaign announcement, you spoke of certain rights and privileges and freedoms that have been taken away from the individual by the federal government. What rights and freedoms have I, as an individual, lost that you would restore if you had your way?
Well, now, I don't know whether in a half-hour program we can get into specifics like that. But I would think that the businessman today, who it has been estimated spends about 35%, the small businessman, of his time filling out government paperwork and forms and regulations and so forth, has lost a certain amount of freedom. I think that the fact that such paperwork costs American industry $20 billion a year, which must then be passed on to the consumer, is an unnecessary harassment. I think that government competition in many lines with private industry is an invasion of freedom, because government happens to be a rather unfair competitor. Things are a little weighted on its side. I could go on at great length on this, but I think the evidences, I think in the farm community, and I happen to be a farmer, I think in an effort legitimately to solve problems that stemmed from a surplus back in the Depression days have led to impositions on the freedom of the farmer. I believe in such programs as urban renewal. We've gotten into dangerous ground with regard to the government's ability to condemn and force the sale of property by an individual, bypassing certain of the laws of eminent domain that we once recognized with regard to the government's having to prove a clear and present need in the public interest.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
Mr. Reagan, if you're unwilling to accept the label of a Goldwater Republican, you are agreeable to letting yourself be known as a conservative Republican, are you not?
Well, now, Mr. Kilpatrick, again, you have me, I've been going around the state here begging my fellow Republicans to drop any of those labels and to just start referring to themselves without hyphens as Republicans. So it wouldn't be very consistent for me now to accept a label for myself. I'm a Republican. I believe that my thinking with regard to constitutional limits on the power of the central government, on a restoration insofar as is possible of the rights of communities to run their own affairs, individuals to run their own affairs, fiscal responsibility in the part of government, I think people are going to have to put their own label on what this makes me.
Let me see if I can get at it this way. 14 months ago, you certainly were supporting Senator Goldwater, and you've just said that your views and his, I believe, substantially coincide. I look back and recall Mr. Goldwater lost California by 1,300,000 votes. What would make you believe that your generally conservative views now would permit you to win in California, apart from the fact that you won't be running against a Lyndon Johnson?
Well, if we started to get into the entire campaign and where we think there might have been short circuits or it might have gotten off the track, that too would be a long discussion. But I question whether we had in 1964 a direct confrontation between the two conflicting viewpoints. I think actually the opposition was very successful in setting up a false image and in knocking down that false image. And we just somehow were unable to get through with in proper perspective. So I don't think this last election could be taken as really a confrontation and a repudiation by the people. As a matter of fact, one of the nationally well-known pollsters right after the election took some of the specific issues that would, to use the labels, actually involve conservatism versus liberalism, and polled the people with no political labels, no candidates involved, just where did they stand on these issues, and came up with the surprising figures that the American people ran anywhere from about 65 to 98% in what could be interpreted as conservative with regard to those specific issues.
Let me see if I can get to one specific issue, Mr. Reagan. FBI crime reports show that in 1963, California ranked among the very worst of the states. In terms of population, California had twice the national rate of burglaries. Your state ranked fifth in auto theft and fourth in assault. It led the entire nation in forcible rape. If you were elected governor, what would you propose to do to improve this picture?
I would propose to ask for the same kind of legislation which was advanced by Republican legislators in California in this last session, and much of which was pocket vetoed by the present governor. Here in California, you can trace that rise in crime, and you have described it accurately. It is a disgrace to a great state. This rise in crime began with certain decisions which interpreted the laws of preemption as meaning that the local communities in California and the local police could no longer have ordinances aiding them or freeing their hands to enforce law because they were in conflict with state legislation in the same area. Now, I don't think it was ever intended that preemption should mean this restriction. And legislation is needed to simply explain that preemption by the state in these areas does not mean that the local communities cannot have ordinances to enable them to enforce the law. I could think of several as examples here in case this whole term of preemption confuses anyone. We have, for example, as most states do, a state automobile licensing for drivers. Previously, communities, cities like Los Angeles, had ordinances in which you could also have a local examination of people who were going to be drivers of public vehicles, cab drivers and so forth, to check on whether they were of a character and were safe to be out alone with someone late at night in a cab ride or something. And then preemption determined that because the state had the right to license a driver on driver qualifications, the local community couldn't have such an ordinance. And there is now no way to check on character or on background with regard to these public drivers.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Reagan, whether or not you like it, the John Birch Society is certain to be an issue in this campaign. What, in general, is your opinion of the society and what it stands for?
Well, I issued a complete statement with regard to the Birch Society in quite some detail. I happened to reject the idea that it is a Republican issue. Now, the John Birch Society is, by its own admission, roughly divided half and half between Democrats and Republicans as to membership, and it does not endorse candidates or political parties. And I don't see why a political party, either political party, should feel it's necessary to take a stand on an outside organization. Now, whether you agree or disagree with whatever they're doing, and I'm quite sure that I could find some agreement with some ideas, but also a great deal of disagreement with others. I've been quite critical of many statements of their founder, Mr. Welch, and I think some of them have approached the ridiculous. But I'm going to appeal in a campaign to individuals, and I figure that any individual who elects to go along with me and vote for me has bought my philosophy, and I haven't bought his. And that's the way it's going to be.
Mr. Reagan, you wouldn't hesitate to condemn the Communist Party, and I believe you have, and I'm sure you wouldn't hesitate to condemn the Ku Klux Klan. Why would you hesitate to express a general opinion on the society itself, its aims, and its goals?
Well, Mr. Spivak, for this reason, you've named, and believe me, I'll take second to no one in my denouncing of the Communist Party or the Ku Klux Klan, or several other organizations of that ilk, but these are organizations that have been listed officially as subversive by our Justice Department in that they would deny constitutional rights to some of our citizens on the basis of some kind of prejudice, whether it be race, religion, or whatever. Now, on the other hand, we have a statement that the FBI has found nothing requiring an investigation of the Birch Society because they don't consider it subversive. And here in California, our state Senate, heavily Democratic, has had two investigations and issued two reports in 63 and in 65 of the Birch Society and has flatly stated they find nothing of a subversive nature in this organization. Now, I think there's a vast difference between the two. When one is, you may disagree with people or an organization, but until they are in violation of the law or the Constitution and are until they are declared subversive, actually, I'd like to suggest that maybe the air could be cleared a great deal if Washington would investigate the John Birch Society and once and for all say to people, you can agree or disagree, but whether it is or is not subversive.
Senator Kuchel said recently, I would support any Republican nominee who promises to kick the John Birch Society out of the party and who is willing to publicly denounce the John Birchers and their philosophies, as well as the Communist Party and the Ku Klux Klan. Now, I take it you will not do that to win Senator Kuchel's support.
Mr. Spivak, I am not a member of the Society. I have no intention of joining. At the same time, I don't see how you can kick an organization out of your party that isn't in your party. It's an outside organization. And you know, all of this attack, and I'm quite sure it's going to continue, with regard to try and hang around Republicans' necks, this organization, which is so controversial and so many people opposed to it, it always reminds me of something. I'm in the horse business. I trade horses, raise them. And there's an old legend or saying in the horse trading business that when a fella comes to trade you a horse, you watch very closely to see which part of your horse he looks at first. And then you go look at his horse in the same place. Because 9 chances out of 10, that's where his horse is weak. And I have a hunch that the opposition party is hoping very desperately that we won't focus some attention on some of their activities with Group Research Incorporated, which I think is a very scurrilous organization, and the certain demonstrations that have occurred here in California and the participation by certain elected representatives of the opposition party in those demonstrations.
Mr. Pettit?
Mr. Reagan, you said that the FBI does not consider the John Birch Society subversive. When did it say that?
J. Edgar Hoover answered this question with regard to when someone asked him about it. He said they'd found no occasion to investigate it because they only investigated subversive organizations.
Well, how did he know it wasn't subversive without investigating it?
Well, now you're going to have to ask J. Edgar Hoover that.
Well, then how do you know the FBI knows it isn't subversive?
Well, I'm only going by his word, and so far, I just happen to be a naive enough soul that I can't ever recall finding J. Edgar Hoover being dishonest or making a statement that was irresponsible.
You think the air would be cleared, though, if there were a senatorial investigation? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, whether senatorial or congressional, whichever investigating committee in Washington would choose to do this. If there's this much controversy, perhaps the people should find out the exact facts. We did here in California, and I would commend to the reading of anyone who's curious about this their report and their findings.
Mr. Reagan, if you were elected governor of California, what specifically would you do and propose to relieve the problems of Negro ghettos like Watts and Oakland and several others in California?
Well, at the risk of oversimplification, I believe that the main problem and the first cure must begin economically with jobs. And there's no doubt that the heaviest proportion of unemployment in a state that has a heavier proportion of unemployment than is its share lies in those areas.
But excuse me, Mr. Reagan, we have less than 2 minutes. I'd like a question from Mr. Kraslow.
Mr. Reagan, Senator Kuchel called the Civil Rights Act of 1964 the greatest domestic accomplishment of the 88th Congress. You, sir, I believe, have stated that you would have voted against that act because you felt that it would, by protecting one individual's rights, you'd be infringing on somebody else's. How do you reconcile these two positions?
Well, this answer, which has been quoted many times with regard to my position, ignored the fact that this came at the end of about 30 minutes of discussion of the whole problem of civil rights. And in that 30 minutes, I've made it very plain that all my life, I have been involved and devoted to the struggle actively for equality of opportunity and equal rights for all people. I just am incapable of prejudice. I believe this. And then the discussion centered on that particular piece of legislation. And I was critical of it in several areas and still feel, and today it has been revealed, and people on both sides of the civil rights discussion are now admitting and complaining that it has a great many holes in it, that it was a badly written piece of legislation. And I just felt that if you have a badly written piece of legislation, you ought to take the time and trouble to put it right and put it on the law books correctly. But I made no exception to the fact that as to the overall aim of the civil rights legislation and what it was seeking to accomplish, I was wholeheartedly in favor.
Mr. Kraslow, a very brief one. You would still today vote against that bill, as it's written.
I don't know, because, you know, what also wasn't quoted is in the discussion after I'd said that, I said, you know, I don't know whether anyone really can say how he would have voted on a particular measure unless he was a part of the discussion.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Reagan, but our time is up now.
Thank you, Edwin Newman. In just a moment, we'll tell you how you can get a copy of this week's Meet the Press interview.
There's a sound that you can almost taste. Vanilla, chocolate, strawberry. And the kids running after the ice cream truck really get up and go when they hear those bells. But there's one who's left behind. He leans on his crutches and gazes after his friends. A boy can't chase an ice cream truck when he has cerebral palsy. But with your help, he can make a beginning and one day walk on his own. Remember, happiness is helping. Give to United Cerebral Palsy.
The Federal Bar Association reminds us that freedom depends on the rule of law. And here to help promote respect for the law and for those who uphold it is Secretary of the Interior, Stuart L. Udall.
The American people are blessed with a heritage of giant trees, rich earth, rushing waters, majestic mountains, and windblown space. We hold these gifts of nature in trust for generations of people yet unborn. Laws have been enacted to protect this natural bounty. These laws guard us from our own selfishness. They seek to prevent you and me from recklessly wasting and spoiling the natural environment we have inherited. They encourage us to practice conservation. Observe the spirit and letter of those laws. Know them well, respect them, for they are the ever-present guardians of the environment in which you live.
Secretary of the Interior Stuart L. Udall, speaking in behalf of the Federal Bar Association and its Law Observance Program. Now more details on Meet the Press. Today's guest was Ronald Reagan, who is seeking the Republican nomination for Governor of California. The panel consisted of Lawrence E. Spivak, producer, David Kraslow of the Los Angeles Times, James J. Kilpatrick of the Richmond News Leader, and Tom Pettit of NBC News. For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press program, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C. For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press program, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C. Studies show that the physical condition of many of our boys and girls has declined so much that they can't pass minimum physical achievement tests. What about your child? Shouldn't you find out about the daily program for physical fitness in your school? Ask your local school officials about it and send for a free leaflet offered by the President's Council on Physical Fitness, Washington 25, D.C. Meet the Press will be heard again next week at this same time. President Johnson's State of the Union message, Wednesday on the NBC Radio Network.